Welcome to Let's Talk Sales, the podcast that's all things sales and business development. This podcast series is for CEOs that are looking to build strong companies, sales VPs and sales managers that want to take things to the next level, and of course, salespeople that are looking to improve. This podcast is brought to you by Calavia, the sales playbook platform made for your team by your team. The Calavia Sales Playbook houses your company's best practices, templates, and processes. And it also functions as an online sales training academy for existing salespeople and for new hires. Learn more at calavia.com. That's C-O-L-L-A-V-I-A.com. Today's podcast is part of our CFS Talk Sales series, where our very own team here at Criteria for Success shares ideas, techniques, tips, and insights for our audience of CEOs, sales managers, and salespeople. This series is all about growth, improvement, and producing breakthrough results. This is Rebecca Smith, Director of Marketing, and today I'm talking to our very own CEO here at CFS, Charles Bernard. Thanks for being here today, Charles.
My pleasure.
Now, I think we're all hopped up on coffee this morning and tea. So it should be a fun session, right? Very exciting. Now, Charles recently wrote an ebook on this month's theme, which is accountability. And the ebook is called Accountability in Sales, a guide for CEOs, sales VPs, and sales managers on how to guide performance. To our listeners, be sure to grab a copy. You can find the link to this ebook in the show notes for today at criteriaforsuccess.com/pod29. So Charles, let's go ahead and jump into this. Accountability in sales, accountability in leadership, such important topics, right? And of course, accountability with clients too, which we're going to get to in a little bit. But for now, can you start by sharing more on why you decided to write this ebook? What problem or problems do you feel or felt needed to be solved?
Well, thanks for the question, Rebecca. And before I get started, I want to acknowledge you because I've been listening to the podcasts Aww. That you've been leading. And I'm really impressed with your level of enthusiasm, your great energy, and listening to some of the wonderful guests that you've interviewed. And so it's fun for me to now be in the hot seat.
Thank you. That's so sweet of you to say. I love doing this, as you can tell.
Oh, yeah. I can tell.
And Charles, you heard my story not too long ago about when I was a kid and I used to pretend to be a radio host. And you said, see, you've been practicing for years.
That's right. So I'm going to answer that question in terms of why I chose to do this for three reasons. One, accountability, I think, is one of the key measurements of leadership in sales. And when people ask me, because I do a lot of coaching of sales leaders, what is the number one thing they should focus on, I generally say accountability. The second reason I wrote this book is also because I think it's a key measure of success of their program that we ourselves put into place with our clients. In other words, we get hired, my company, our company gets hired to develop a sales growth program. And when we're selling it and when we're kicking it off, one of the first questions we get asked is, how do we measure the success of the program? And you'd think, right, that everyone is going to look for an increase in revenue or an increase in profit. And yes, that's something that clearly will occur and we intend for it to occur. But to me, what really makes this program work is if we can solve for accountability. So that's number two. Mm-hmm. And number three is when I look at our program, when I look at any program, any system like a CRM system, when a company, an organization decides to put it in, the biggest issue is not, is it addressing from a technical perspective the right features? Is it giving the salespeople the right coaching? All of that. I think the biggest problem is adoption. And so where we, again, solve for adoption, where we really focus is if you can get that sales team and everyone on the team to opt in to being held accountable, then you're likely to get adoption along with it. So those are the three reasons that I really picked as the driver for why I wrote this book.
Very interesting. And now it'd probably be good for us to start by defining accountability and kind of what that means at the levels that you just spoke to, because you kind of spoke to accountability between the client when we're working with the client, then the accountability from a manager. And then you also talked about that third one, which is accountability from the salesperson that's getting trained, right? And kind of what that means. Do you want to say a couple words on that, on what accountability means to you?
I'm really, really glad you asked, because this is something I think you know I'm really passionate about. And I do a lot of training, and I love it. And I do a lot of speaking engagements, and I love it. And my line when I'm giving out my accountability speech is, everyone talks a big game about accountability. Mm-hmm. It's like, I want to hold my team accountable. My team's not accountable. I want to make them accountable. It's sort of like a lot of whining going on. And people want to know, what's the secret? Like, how do I get people to become accountable? And I say two things. I can, number one, find out, and it's in my book. It's my opening, actually. In 2 seconds, if you can answer these two questions, you have accountability. Question number one is, are your salespeople, is the sales team setting monthly, at a minimum, monthly and weekly goals? That's the first question. So if the answer is yes, then you're halfway there. You'd think that would be the whole way there. Yeah, actually, right? You're only halfway there. The second question that goes right after that one is, are they not only setting goals, but are they managing and reviewing their goals? And if they're doing that, then I think you really got accountability. So those two things are the measure. And, you know, it's funny because people go, that's it? And I'm like, yeah, that's it. You get people setting goals. You get people tracking goals. You get people – you're a big goal setter, because I know you talk a lot about it also. And I just watch how you work. And so to me, I don't have to go much further than that. The rest is kind of tweaks and things that you can do to improve. But that's really the fundamental. So when you ask what's accountability, that's it for me.
You make a really good point there, Charles, when you talked about the salesperson themselves being involved in the goal setting process. It's kind of like, I actually wrote this in a blog post that posted on Tuesday, March 6th. And it reminds me of the idea of parenting. Right? You've got a couple of different types of parents. And some parents, they either because they lacked as children or because they don't have any lack and never had, kind of have this tendency to say, all right, I'm going to take care of you. Don't worry about a thing. You'll never have to worry about anything. And then there's the other parent who, same thing, either they have everything or they had nothing, say, everything that you're going to receive in life, you're going to get because you've earned it. I'm giving you nothing. You're kind of out in the cold, right? And that's kind of how it is in the sales world, in a sense. If you don't grow up with that mentality where everything's been given to you, it's hard for you to understand and know how to work for something for yourself. And so for those salespeople that are, you know, kind of forced, in a sense, to be a part of the goal setting process, there's an investment level there. You know, they're invested, and it makes them accountable to it because they were part of that process of creating goals. Is that kind of what you're saying, in a sense?
I think so. And being a parent myself, I like your analogy. I have to be honest and confess that I'm in that helicopter parent category. And if you really think about it, or I really think about it, as I'm thinking about it right now, I can imagine there are parallels with sales leaders, sales managers, sales VPs, who are helicopter leaders. And they're watching every move, and they're checking in, and they're asking, did you do that? Did you do that? Did you do that?
Ooh, the micromanager. We love that.
The micro. And, you know, I like the idea, and that's exhausting.
Oh, yeah.
It really is, you know, for the manager.
Check in all the time.
Checking in. I got 10 salespeople, 20 salespeople. I mean, I can't cover.
They can't do the work for them. I mean,
do the work for them.
Reach the goal for your salesperson.
So I think putting in a system, as you were saying, where salespeople, like kids, like parents who are working with their kids, allowing their kids to opt in to become accountable for themselves. Same mm-hmm. thing. I really like that analogy. That works.
Cool. It just reminded me of that. I figured it was worth mentioning. Now, of course, in the ebook, you explore accountability from a lot of different perspectives, actually. Mm-hmm. I wanted to list them out here for those listening and to motivate you to go grab a copy because this is a very, very detailed ebook. So we've got how senior leadership can grow accountability in sales. You talk about the senior leadership accountability vacuum, which is interesting. Resisting accountability, blaming others, which is kind of a subset of resistance in some ways. The accountability reset, accountability and performance, how leadership coaching can drive accountability. Goal accountability, and then lastly, accountability with clients. Now, of course, as I just mentioned, this is really comprehensive, and there's quite a bit from accountability on all ends of the spectrum. So let's break it down. Can you tell me more about your focus on senior leadership and accountability to get started?
Well, you listed quite a few.
Yeah, everything basically.
Yeah, quite a few topics there. But if I look, go ahead and read the ebook. I mean, you're obviously going to want to read the ebook to get the detail. But my two favorite, honestly, are the accountability reset and accountability with clients. And I'll explain that.
Okay.
So to me, I come across this conversation, accountability, a lot. And I think there's this expectation that people have to be perfect. You're either accountable or you're not. Or you were born accountable or you weren't. Or you one day arrive and you're permanently accountable. It doesn't work that way. So when I talk about the accountability reset, what I'm really talking about is addressing broken commitments. Mm-hmm. And I mean on both ends, mm-hmm. meaning broken commitments from the person who opted to be held accountable and broken commitments, frankly, from the person holding the other person accountable. Because if you're a leader and you fail in that, you're as guilty as the person who didn't do what they said they were going to do. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of like a two-way street there. And so what is the reset? I think the reset, very simply, is to address broken commitments on both sides. That's really what I mean by the reset. And that's okay. one of the reasons I love it, because it also is disguised as one of my core values and one of our core values here at CFS, and that is that we're going to screw up. We're going to do things that we didn't want to do. We're going to make promises we don't keep. But the core value is to always clean up the mess. And so that's why I like the accountability reset. Have the ability to, when things get to a point where someone's consistently not being accountable, or when it gets to the point where the leader is not holding the person or the people accountable, to be able to call it and say, let's have a meeting. Let's talk. I actually did this recently with someone here at CFS where we sat down and we said, let's talk about our broken commitments. Here are mine. Here are the things I broke. I promised you an annual review and I didn't do it. And it's March and we're going to do it. And, mm-hmm. and we got busy and you accepted it. But frankly, it's a commitment I made to you and we didn't do it. So that's an example of me putting on the table my broken commitment. Mm-hmm. And the other person said, great, you know, here's what I feel I could have done a better job of. And so we went back and forth. And so that's that. I don't know if you want me to keep explaining that particular point before I get to the next one. But
well, it sounds to me like what you're saying is that accountability, like most things, is a choice. And you can choose to clean it up or you can choose to brush it under the rug and pretend like it never happened. But then that's always there. It's something that's always there. It's kind of like forgiveness. You know, yes. If you don't ask for forgiveness and you just move on from something bad that happened, it's always kind of there in
right.
a way.
Right? Right. If you don't ask and you don't give, right? So you got to ask for forgiveness and you've got to forgive.
So accountability, you could probably say sort of the same thing, that if something goes wrong and you don't handle it and everybody just pretends like everything's moving on. Now, it's going to be different with a client than it is internally at a company, but I'll let you speak to that.
Well, that leads me to my second favorite. So that was a wonderful segue. So accountability with clients is, for me, a big issue. Mm. And you talked about sweeping things under the rug. If I had to say, where do people get the biggest pass? It's clients and prospects. Why? Because they're the client and they're the prospect and they control the purse strings and they're the ones who opt to hire you and they're the ones paying the bills. And yet I feel in having been a client and being a client in some ways and having sold to clients and working with clients for many years, I can tell you with my hand on my heart that the best relationships, and I've actually talked to a couple of clients about this, and I'm really happy that they validated my point, that the best clients are the one that honor their own commitments and are willing to be held accountable to the things they owe me as a salesperson. And, you know, an example is they feel, a lot of clients who aren't accountable, that it's okay to show up late to meetings. It's okay to not get back to you on time when you send an email and you're really waiting for a response, either on a proposal or on a deliverable, and they get a pass, they're busy, you're in the line like everybody else. And I think the ones that wise up quickly to the fact that my salesperson's a human being and they're busy too, just like me, and I have a commitment to get back to them on time, and I have a commitment to clean it up if I don't, and this is speaking as a client, I really think those are the ones that get the most out of their salespeople. Because if you think of the opposite, where you get the worst from your salesperson is when you don't show up, don't honor your word, chisel them on price, beat them up for every little thing that they didn't do. And so I feel that the enlightened clients are the ones that are willing to be held accountable on their end, as well as holding their salesperson accountable. So I think it's a it's a great two-way street, and that's a good relationship.
Now, to this point, Charles, you are actually in the process of writing a book on and it's on workability, which is very, the concept is similar, and it's inclusive of the idea of accountability, but it kind of started because of essentially a lack of workability, a lack of accountability in prospecting, even clients, sometimes relationships. And I think what you discovered was that a conversation needs to be had at the beginning of a relationship to establish the relationship moving forward, right? Establish workability.
Yes.
Is that right? Can you share a little bit more on workability and accountability?
Yeah, I think workability and accountability are similar, from the standpoint of expectation setting. And I think a lot of people go, well, I like that. That sounds good. I have no idea what that means. or not that they don't know what it means, but it's more, you know, the question is, how do I do that? Like, how do I set expectations? And I think a lot of people go down the mechanical road, meaning they all talk about deliverables and steps in a project. They'll talk about setting expectations in terms of milestones, in terms of fees. That's not really what I mean. I talk about some of those intangible things, like we're a feedback organization and we want feedback, and we're setting an expectation that we give feedback, that we expect it. And feedback isn't just positive. We want constructive criticism. If you have something that you feel is negative, please don't hold back, because that's how we learn. We talk about adding value as a philosophy and how we go about doing that. And we talk about being invested in a long-term relationship, which will have bumps. And we might win and lose deals, but still preserve a relationship. So that to me is kind of what I mean by setting a workability / accountability expectation setting conversation.
Sure. And I think that you're also pretty big on time. When you are speaking, and I know this from hearing you talk to people all the time, and when you tell someone you're going to do something, many times you'll actually say, I will get this to you by the end of today, or I'll get this to you within 24 hours. I'll get this to you within 48 hours. Kind of assigning a time to something is something that's important to you, right?
Very important. And I think it adds another level of commitment and expectation setting. And people on the other end, person receiving that statement, can now hold me accountable to it. And don't forget, I still have that joker card, which is my cleanup. And I don't mean it like I know I can give myself a pass. I mean, legitimately, if I know I'm not able to deliver something that I promised I would deliver, I don't want to spend hours beating myself up and thinking that there's something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. What I'd rather do is address it immediately and tell somebody that, you know, I just can't honor that commitment. As a matter of fact, I've got an example.
Let's hear it.
Well, the reason I'm saying it, I'm laughing, it's so funny. There's really no coincidences in life, is that 5 minutes ago, as we were preparing for this podcast, I told you I had to make a phone call. And I'm traveling. And tonight is going to be a big storm night. It's going to arrive. There's going to be a nor'easter. And I'm flying back tomorrow. Today's Tuesday. I'm flying back tomorrow, Wednesday. I'm scheduled to deliver a keynote talk on Thursday. Now, that's a promise I made. And I take that very seriously. Checking the airlines, checking the weather, there appears to be no way that I'm going to get back from Chicago, where I am going, in time for that keynote. So I had to call the person. And the moment I found out from Delta that this was going to be a problem, I called him right away. And rather than hear a lot of frustration on his end, I got a thank you. I was like blown away. He actually thanked me. He said, look, these things happen. I appreciate that you called me right away. I'll do the best I can and make alternative arrangements. And I gave him some alternative. Mm-hmm. So I think you bring a problem to somebody, you want to have some solutions. I had some ideas. In fact, you were part of the solution. and he's like, great, thanks for thinking of it, and I'll get back to you. But that's an example of where you make a commitment, you take it very seriously, but you also have the commitment to clean it up if you're not going to deliver.
Yeah, I think it's good to come in, to be preemptive about those types of things rather than wait until something's gone wrong to reach out and say, oh, this has gone wrong. I know that for me, I don't like to be late for appointments because I know that it sets back the other person that is waiting to receive you for that appointment. So if there's ever an opportunity or a time, actually over the weekend, I had this happen because we got a storm and the roads had all these trees and stuff.
So many storms this year.
I know, it's crazy. So I had an appointment, and as soon as I got in the car and the GPS updated me to let me know I was going to be delayed, I immediately called where I was going and I said, I'm not sure if I'll be late, but I looks like I will be. I'll drive as fast as I can to get there. And the lady was shocked. She couldn't believe I was calling to tell her that. Apparently nobody does that. They just show up late or don't show up at all. And people really appreciate that.
So let me just jump on that just to kind of like put a tie bow around that thought, mm-hmm. because I really like the way you said what you said. And that is that I find, back to accountability and performance, that those of us, you and me and everybody else, when we know we're about to break a commitment and it's likely we're going to break a commitment, it's really, I think what causes us the most suffering is how long we sit on it.
Yeah,
like I have to
yeah.
mull it over. How am I going to call this person? When am I going to call this person? Yeah. Well, maybe if I have a cup of tea first and calm myself down before I call this person. And all of that nonsense that gets in the way, I think the longer we leave things to get cleaned up, the worse it becomes in
Definitely.
Our head, right?
Yeah.
And so I think a large part of accountability and good performance is being able to like act on it the moment it comes up and not wait.
Yep. Rip the Band-Aid off. Get it over with.
Yeah.
So now this actually leads perfectly into this idea on resisting accountability and blaming others. You start the section on resisting accountability, actually on the blaming others, I believe, section with the fantastic quote by Courtney Lynch, where she says, leaders inspire accountability through their ability to accept responsibility before they place blame. So can you speak a little bit more to the importance of leaders leading from the front? Mm-hmm. You know, leaders being the ones to say, I have to be responsible first before I can ever expect those behind me to, or, you know.
Yeah, sure. Well, in preparing for the book, I interviewed some people, and one interview in particular stuck out. And that was a salesperson that's a friend of mine. And she said one of the reasons she resists accountability is because she has to confront two things. One is the reality of her own performance. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if we kind of hide and not look at the numbers and the indicators, that somehow we'll be in a better frame of mind to deal with the problem. And she also said the other thing, because I said two things. The other thing was having to confront because she's pretty competitive, and I know her for a number of years, having to confront where she is compared to the rest of the team. Mm-hmm. And I find this is a common trait for top performers who resist accountability. It's kind of like, I either have to be number one or I'm no place. And I don't want to confront that. So I think this whole thing of resisting accountability is part of confronting the truth and reality. So that's one. And then you're talking about leaders. I think another thing that I, and this is from personal experience, but also knowing a few leaders and how they operate, it's very similar in that when we're in a leadership role, it's easy for us to give ourselves a pass. I'm the boss. And I can hold others accountable, but hey, you know, I get a pass because there's no one above me. And I think that's a slippery slope, to mm-hmm. be honest. Mm-hmm. And that's a place where we can resist accountability, kind of like make up an excuse. And if you think about it, we're no different. Just the fact that we wear a title doesn't make us any different in terms of resisting accountability. So I think it boils down to either giving ourselves a pass or not being willing to tell the truth.
So how can you get around that? As a CEO, as a senior leader, as someone that maybe doesn't have anybody above them to keep them accountable, who can they go to keep them accountable? I know that, Charles, you are a member of a Vistage group.
Yep.
That keeps you on track. And I know your chair, he stays on top of you yep. for the most part to make sure that you're doing what you say you're going to do, right?
No, I think you've given the answer even in the question. And I
sorry.
Which is fine because that happens a lot. I think it was a great question and also a great insight at the same time. We have something called a coaching program in our own sales growth program, but it really reflects what you said, and that is that if you're a coach to others, you better have coaches that coach you. Mm-hmm. So I feel it's really critical that everyone gets coached, the coaches get coached. And like you said, even though I'm the CEO of this company, I like to make sure that I'm not giving myself too much of a pass by having someone who's holding me accountable. And mm-hmm. Mark is his name, Mark Taylor. Some of you listening to this podcast may know his name. He's a Vistage chair, wonderful person. And although we're friends and although we really get along well, I know that if I've crossed the line or if I've promised something and for whatever reason try to sneak by him, he's one of those guys that doesn't let things slide.
No, he doesn't. And speaking a little more personally here, I think that it's important for us too to have accountability partners for different purposes.
Yes.
Like an example is Gordon Coyle, who is on the show as well. He's an insurance agent. And he and I became accountability partners after meeting each other at a LinkedIn event where we were urged by actually Joe Applebaum, who was also on the show, awesome guy. He did a LinkedIn seminar and Gordon and I were sitting next to each other, became accountability buddies and checked in with each other every week to make sure we were doing what we needed to do. So something that I actually just recommended out of sales training in Florida that we did last week was for the salespeople to buddy up together and be accountable to each other because they're road warriors mm-hmm. and they don't get to see each other except for this once a year that they're in a training. Now, their managers agreed to pair people because they felt they wanted to have a hand in who they thought would work the best together. But then the salespeople at a salesperson level agreed at the end of every week, every Friday, they're going to call each other and check in and just say, you know, did you do everything you needed to do this week? Who did you help this week? You know, what are you going to do to improve upon this past week, next week?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of working at a peer-to-peer level. And I think that can work too for leaders.
Yeah. And you're speaking to something I'm also very passionate about, and that's peer-level coaching. And one of the things, so we have this coaching program, and which is part of our sales growth program. And we are very strict, if you will, that may be not the word I'm looking for, but I'll take it for now. And that is that it's essential that we create this peer level program. And the very first thing we have to address is that just because you've been selected, whether it was you volunteering or someone selected you in, it's not a hierarchical thing. It's like, so we've got 20 people on a sales team, and we usually divide them in groups of three because we
triads,
find
nice.
Triads. Yeah. Triads work really well. And what I can tell you as a model in terms of what you were saying at peer level that works best is when there isn't this hierarchy, right? It's not like I'm the coach, I'm better than mm-hmm. you, or I'm a favorite, and that's why I got picked. That tends to not be the case and melts away very quickly. What we do find works is when the coach is responsible for setting up the meeting, making sure everyone arrives, but at the meeting, they ask coaching of the other two, if it's a triad, just as much as they give it. So it really becomes a true peer level coaching. And again, it goes back to, hey, I don't get a pass because I'm the coach. Yeah. I'm like in this with you. So when we talk about setting monthly goals, I'm the first to raise my hand and say, by the way, guys, just full disclosure here, I hadn't set my monthly goals and I could use some support. So that kind of thing. Peer level is very powerful.
Good. Now, Charles, I have to ask, since we are a digital sales playbook organization, what role does a sales playbook play when it comes to accountability and a person's accountability to their goals? Do you have any tips or advice that you can pass along? And of course, especially to our Klaviyo listeners that are listening in.
Sure. So I thought about this as you were speaking, and I thought, how do I make this relevant? Because I could say a lot of things, but we're talking about accountability. So relative to the playbook, I recommend that you create an area where you can create what we call journal pages. So if you're a coach and you're coaching other people on a team, and this could rotate, so you don't always have to be the coach, but let's say this quarter or this period, you're the coach. I think having a section in the playbook where you can make notes about your coaching conversations is useful because, again, we're talking about accountability, and I get busy, and I got so much I can process. And so when it comes to going back to that conversation a week later that we had, I'm going to want to go someplace to know what we talked about. Mm-hmm. I could go to my notebook, but I think having it in a playbook, having as much relative to sales in one place is helpful. So we talked about a playbook, I think, and we encourage this. I think having a goals page and a goal journal page in the playbook where I can record notes as a coach. And if I'm a coachee, I can have a place in the playbook to put my goals so mm-hmm. we can talk about them. So both of those belong in the playbook.
Now, I can definitely speak to that since we obviously have a digital sales playbook ourselves. And the weekly goals page isn't just for the manager. It's not just for the coach. You know, it's for us as an individual, for me as an individual, to plan my week and to make sure that I'm getting done what I planned to get done that week. And if I don't get things done, carry that over, which I learned the hard way that I was way too ambitious about thinking that I could get more things done than I could. And I learned that by having to go through that process, though.
Yeah, it's trial and
error. If I hadn't have gone through that process, you know, I would have never known and wouldn't have gotten the things done that I needed to get done. So I like that. And now you might also, I'm thinking, prospecting action plans, right? Monthly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I'm thinking weekly, but you're right. Monthly prospecting action plans really drive all the weekly goals, and a monthly prospecting action plan definitely belongs in your playbook. And I'm sure Rebecca in about 5 seconds is going to say there's a resource somewhere for that.
Hey, there's a resource for that. I'll add it to the show notes.
But we have this process and this template that we learned, and it's very effective and it's somewhat unique. And it talks about how to develop an effective monthly prospecting action plan. It has 4 sections. I won't spoil it by giving those away. But it's a very useful tool. And again, thank you for reminding me because that does belong in your sales playbook.
Good deal. Well, Charles, I could talk about this all day long, but of course I don't want to because we need people to download this ebook and check it out for themselves and pass it along to their friends and other leaders. So if you're listening in now, download a copy. It's free and it can be found in the notes for today's show at criteriaforsuccess.com/pod29. Charles, thank you for being on the show today.
It's my pleasure. It's always fun doing these with you, Rebecca. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you so much for listening to today's show. Again, the show notes can be found at criteriaforsuccess.com/pod29. Be sure to tune in on Friday for a very special inspiration about accountability. And of course, tune in next week for a special episode with an interview from Robert Handel of VoIP Networks. And all month, we are writing about accountability on the CFS blog, so check that out, criteriaforsuccess.com/blog. And if you like what you're hearing, could you do us a favor and subscribe to the podcast at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to shows? And really, if you want to step up your game, drop us a rating. We would love to hear what you love about the show. It really helps us to improve and keeps us going, encourages us. So Let's Talk Sales is a production of Criteria for Success and is produced by myself here, Rebecca Smith, Ariana Miskell, and Elizabeth Frederick. Happy selling, everyone.